Welcome to SBC This Week. I'm Brandon Porter. Laura Erlandson is here with me. Hello, Laura.
Hi, Brandon.
Well, how's it going this week?
It's great. It has been a busy week. We've been at the ballpark a ton.
Mm-hmm.
And last night, I literally sat in the car and watched a softball game. Two softball games, to be exact. It was a doubleheader.
Oh, yeah? Just trying to escape the wind and the cold?
It was freezing. It was windy and so cold. And my husband noticed that there was a parking spot kind of right behind home plate on the field where we were.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, I think I can go get that spot. I'm like, do it.
Yeah.
So he did. And we sat in the car and watched them win both games.
Yeah.
And I would wave at my daughter through the windshield and she was out there shivering. But she loved it. She had a great time.
Yeah. Very good. Very good. Well, so it has been an odd, this has been our spring break week for our family. And boy, it has been rainy and cold and tornadoes in central Kentucky. And there in the office in Nashville one day, I look out and there's hail hitting the window sill.
Wow.
So just been a crazy week weather-wise for us. So Laura, we have a little bit of breaking news here on SBC this week. It's personal. Yeah, it's a little personal in nature, but you know, if I seem distracted during this podcast, I need you and the tens of listeners who are along with us here to know what's happening. So I have just
received... it's at least dozens.
Okay. Yeah. All right. It'll be a good week for us. So I've just received a picture from my wife of some folks who are dismantling a trampoline in our backyard. In our house where we've been the last few years. There was a playground and a trampoline that had been there for a while, and our kids are older. And so we have gone the Facebook marketplace route of giving away this trampoline. And so these folks are
always a little sketchy.
Well, you know,
especially they're coming to your house. You know, you're not meeting them at the Target parking lot or anything. They're like
right
at your house. Yeah,
right. Yeah, I've kind of avoided Craigslist and Facebook Marketplace and things like that for this specific purpose. And so they are dismantling the trampoline, and Monica is giving me sort of a play by play report as she watches them, because they came in a very small car and they're tearing it down and putting it in the car, you know, so it's not a big trailer or a truck or anything like that. And so
you guys did not actually purchase these items. They were there when you bought the house.
Right. Yeah, they were
but there's no real emotional attachment. See, I feel like if my kids play set in our backyard that does not get used anymore because they're too big for it, I feel like I'll be very sad the day that we have to take it down, because I'm emotionally attached to it because they played on it when they were really little.
No, we've already had that moment with a previous playset at another, you know, a house where I was pastoring.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, the one that we built and where it actually was delivered. Man, we're way off topic here. I'll try to do this and wrap it up. So that playset was actually delivered on the day that one of our children was born. And so, and we didn't know it was coming that day. And so Monica's in the hospital in the midst of delivery, and I get a phone call, and it's the guys on the flatbed truck saying, hey, we've got all this lumber for your playset.
It's not priority today.
Right. Yeah. So I think maybe my dad was dispatched from the hospital to go and oversee that. So anyway, a lot more information than folks wanted to know, but you know, it's just real life. It's real life. And this is happening right now. So, all right. So another piece of real life, Laura, that came in this week, is as Jeff Orge transitions to the executive committee, we learn this week who will move into that lead role. Should the trustees make the decision to follow the leadership of their search committee. And that would be Adam Groza, who has been on staff there at Gateway for a number of years, for 14 years. So he is well known and, from what we hear and understand, well loved in that Gateway community. And so we're excited about his nomination, and the trustees will vote, Lord willing, on him April 14, 15 during their trustee meeting. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Robert White, the search chairman there, which many might remember as from his tenure in Alabama as the leader there. He was the leader of the search team there at Gateway, and he said it was a unanimous decision. We heard even Dr. Orge talk about it in our building this week, that it had just been a really smooth process, and everyone is just in agreement. And so, the trustees will vote later this month. Groza has, like you said, been there like 14 years and has been just an integral part of the things that have happened, the huge even transitions that have happened.
Yeah, absolutely.
Going from Golden Gate Seminary in San Francisco to Gateway Seminary in Southern California, just a big part of all of that. And he's an author. He's actually published several First Persons in Baptist Press, so we've seen his name for a long time. So yeah, Southern Baptists may be familiar with his work, but will be even more so familiar with Adam Groza, it looks like, in the days ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. So a couple of stories this week related to that. So if you want to check those out, they're very encouraging. Also, something I think that's probably bittersweet, Laura, is that we learned that Tommy Green has announced his retirement as the state executive director treasurer in Florida. That came late on Thursday night of this week.
Yeah, I was actually sitting in the car watching the softball game when I got the news of this. yeah, he's been there since 2015 and there in Jacksonville at the Florida Baptist Convention, the executive director treasurer there. And he went there directly from First Baptist Church Brandon, Florida, where my my parents have been members for a long time. And so he was their pastor for years and they love him so much. My family has benefited so much from his ministry. Not just when he was at First Baptist Brandon, but even after that, even after he went to Jacksonville, just always just very pastoral to his former parishioners, I would say, just always checking in, making sure they're okay. And just our family really loves the Green family. And so it's kind of, you know, like you said, bittersweet, but he has been transformative there at the Florida Baptist Convention. It's been really neat to see. I always knew even before he went there that his passion was the Great Commission, but he really put his money where his mouth was when he got there and in pretty short order moved their CP allocation to 51%, one of the first states to ever do that. And a lot of states have followed suit. He kind of set the tone for that, set an example for other states. And just his partnerships with Haiti, there's partnership with churches in Ohio and just one thing after another that has just been real inspiring there in the Florida Baptist Convention. So really a sweet time for the Green family. I'm sure they'll be happy for him to have more time with the family. And I'm sure we'll see who the next leader is for Florida Baptist. He'll be there until the end of this year, he said.
That's right. Yeah, through the end of the year. A great quote from him that Margaret Colson used in the story. Green has emphasized that the convention exists to serve the churches, stating that God said, I will build my church, not I will build my convention. So just a great partner to churches there to like their slogan says, right beside you.
Yeah, right. I love that.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, got some annual meeting news and information coming up here. So some things have happened this week, Laura. Get your resolutions ready because the portal is open.
It is.
Yeah. It actually opened on April 1st. I did see, you know, there were a handful of April Fool's type resolutions being floated around on social media. So I'm sure Kristen Ferguson and the folks there, if any of them made it through, we'll get a kick out of reading those. Yeah. But
the portal, you'll remember that this year it'll close a little bit earlier.
Right.
Yeah. It closes at the end of the day, May 22nd.
That's right.
Because the resolutions committee, as of the motion by messengers last year, they want more time to look at these resolutions before they vote on them.
Yeah.
And so the committee will meet ahead of the annual meeting instead of right before it.
Yeah, and not only will they meet, but they will inform messengers of sort of what they see coming down the road. And so, the language says that the initial report will be made public no later than 10 days prior, and a final report appearing in the Daily Bulletin on the first day messengers gather in Indianapolis on June the 11th. And so trying to make that effort to get the information to folks sooner so they can be thinking and praying and preparing as they head toward the annual meeting. And we've learned this week that for those coming to the annual meeting, there is another SBC candidate. That brings us, Laura, to a total of five candidates
Who in have recent been... history, I think the record is six. So I don't know who out there listening might want to jump into the ring, but
who knows?
We have a slot for you.
Yeah, there you go. So these, and when we say that five announced candidates, obviously it's all, you know, it all hinges on what actually happens on the stage at the annual meeting there on the platform. And so, but North Carolina Pastor Bruce Frank will be nominated to serve as SBC president. We learned this week he's going to be nominated by Knoxville, Tennessee area Pastor John Mark Harrison.
Yes, and you might know, if you follow SBC News at all, you might know the name Bruce Frank. He was the chairman of the original sex abuse task force that came in the wake of the 2021 annual meeting in Nashville, and oversaw the third-party investigation into the executive committee that made the agreement with Guidepost to handle that investigation. And so, yeah, Bruce Frank has been intimately involved with the sexual abuse reform efforts in the SBC. And he's the pastor of Biltmore Church there in the Asheville, North Carolina area. Harrison, his nominator, said that he has provided faithful pastoral leadership for 3 decades. He has served both the church and the convention with sacrificial leadership. He's theologically conservative, strategically minded, and missionally focused.
Yeah. The ACP report for Biltmore from 2023 shows that they recorded 384 baptisms, averaged 7,331 people across numerous multi-site locations. The church reported 14.47 million in undesignated receipts, giving $235,000 through the cooperative program, $15,000 to the Annie Armstrong Christmas offering, or sorry, Easter offering, $30,000 to the Lottie Moon Christmas offering, and then they also gave $40,000 to their local association in 2023. So another candidate there, and like you said, we'll keep watching to see if there are others. Of course, the annual meeting, as we come to the end of this little segment on that, is June 11 and 12 at the Indiana Convention Center in Indianapolis. Saw where Jonathan tweeted out this week that we've crossed 4,000 pre-registered messengers. And so that is very active and happening.
So that kind of is a harbinger of maybe 10 to 12,000 messengers, and which is significantly larger than the last time we met in Indianapolis. So once again, we're seeing trends of more people come into the annual meeting.
Yeah. So some big things going on there. Also this week, we had our cooperative program numbers for March of 2024, and kind of an interesting report. I'll call it that, Laura.
Yeah, a little bit mixed, I would say. Mm-hmm. They were below the budgeted goal for the month of March by a little over 2%. However, when you compare, we're halfway through the fiscal year now at the end of March. And when we were at the halfway point last year at this time, Southern Baptist had given a total of, I can't remember the exact number, like $97.8 million. And then this year they've given a total of $98.1 million. So a little bit above last year's total halfway through the fiscal year. So that's encouraging.
Absolutely. So you can get all that. We won't go through all the bullet points and numbers and all that on the podcast, but you can find that story at Baptist Press. Also in the financial world, Laura, this week, Guidestone and Lifeway and Baptist State Conventions working toward completing the SBC Church Compensation Survey. They have opened a portal with a survey that takes about 10 minutes to complete. They're hoping to get those received from pastors and churches who will participate by the end of June. And that's really helpful. I know our church, we have used that a number of times just in budgeting and planning purposes to make sure that we are where we need to be in what our church is, how we're compensating our staff members. And so, Laura, that's available at guidestone.org/compensation survey.
And, yeah, my church has used that too, to make sure that we're kind of the same, if not exactly the same, but at least sort of in the range of where we need to be paying staff members. Mm-hmm. And so it's very important. It only comes out every 2 years. They only do the survey every other year. And so, it's worth 10 minutes of your time to give that information.
Yeah. Very helpful. Let's see, Laura, we got a story from Lifeway this week, from Lifeway Research. It was based on the 2022 annual church profile. So not the 23, but the 22. And it talked about a decline in the number of churches in the SBC. It also talked about some churches that had come into the SBC during that period of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the number of congregations that left the SBC, whether that was through going to another denomination or whether that was the church closing or other reasons, was 1,253, which is a big number. But they were replaced. I would say about half of those churches were replaced by new church plants and church type missions. And so the net loss, you would say, is closer to about 600. I haven't actually crunched the numbers, but something like that.
Yeah. Yeah. So very interesting insights there, the data, the insights. And so that's available for you to go and to check out, to think about. And, you know, I mean, that's, churches are organic, you know, they are.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They're
there's a life cycle.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Living beings almost. I was trying to think how to say that.
Well, and I would think because these are the 2022 numbers, there's probably a lot of COVID reflected in these numbers.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And so anyway, just interesting to check that out. All right. So a couple of things from IMB and NAM this week. Serve Tour, we had a story on that. It happened back in mid-March. There were 48 churches from across 9 states that came to Dallas to join in and partner in the Serve Tour that happened there in Dallas.
Yeah, so Send Relief has been doing these tours in various cities, and we've run stories from several of those. And this is one that they did in Dallas. And yeah, like you said, 9 states came to get different churches from a bunch of that whole region came together. There were 520 gospel conversations, which led to at least 34 people professing faith in Christ. And they did all kinds of projects, you know, at schools and churches and just individuals in the community, providing food and all kind of things for those few days there in Dallas. So that was kind of a fun story. Some fun pictures, too.
Yeah,
I always
absolutely.
Like the pictures.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Definitely. Another fun story. The IMB has their Project 3000, and they are moving forward, making progress with that. So Project 3000 is their initiative to reach 3,072 unengaged people groups. They're trying to send 300 missionary explorers, they're calling them, over the next few years to begin to reach those people groups. And they had a Q&A story with one of those missionary explorers. June Estes is her name. And she talks about how it's a dream come true to be on the front lines going and sharing the gospel with those who have never heard. And like I say, it's a Q&A. And so it's details when people ask her what she's doing and what she's experiencing. She unpacks that in the story. And so fun to hear her in her own words as we look over her shoulder to see about that work that God's called her to do there on the mission field.
Yeah, if you were in New Orleans, you remember Paul Chitwood talking about this program, and they kind of unveiled it there. And it is really just a no holds barred, pulling out all the stops effort to reach the very last of the unreached, unengaged people groups. And the reason nobody has reached them yet is because it's really hard to reach them. These people are in very hard to get to places or in very dangerous places. And so, this Q&A with this young woman about her experiences was encouraging and just exciting to think that, you know, as Southern Baptists who gives to the cooperative program and gives to the Lighting Moon Christmas offering, you're a part of this, you're a part of this effort. And it was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Very neat. I wonder what happened to that big hat that he had on in New Orleans.
Forgot about that. Have some pictures of it though.
Yeah, I know. But do you think he was able to put that into his carry-on bag, or do you have to check that when he went back to Richmond?
He probably had to check it. Maybe he had to ship it back.
Maybe.
So,
or maybe he just wore it. Maybe he wore it.
I think IMB in Richmond there at their building, they should like pass it around. And like if somebody does something good or something, they should like get to have the desk that
yeah, it could be like
had on their desk for a week or something.
Yeah, yeah. That'd be awesome. That'd be fun. Have a picture, a wall of pictures of when you have to wear the hat. Yeah, that's great. So we'll reach out to some folks. We'll send an email, make that suggestion. All right. ERLC. So up in Iowa, Laura, big happenings up there this week related to religious freedom and some Southern Baptist voices involved in influencing and celebrating, giving thanks to the Lord for his work through their state government there and what was accomplished as the Religious Freedom Restoration Act was passed in Iowa this week.
Yeah, so you might remember maybe back in February when the ERLC released its state legislative initiatives. They released the federal one in January and then the state one in February because the state legislatures usually don't start to meet until later in the year. And this was one of their big initiatives, was to get more states to pass the state version of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act that was originally passed in the Clinton administration, like back in 1990.
Early 90s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so a lot of states have passed their own versions. In fact, more than half of the states now, as of just within the last few months, more than half the states now have their own version. But Iowa was the latest one. So this week, Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds, their legislature passed it a few weeks ago, and she actually signed it into law. And there was a big ceremony there in Iowa. And Tim Lubinus, who's the executive director of the Iowa Baptist Convention, actually attended the ceremony. And I got to speak with him this week and talk to him about that and just how encouraged Iowa, not just Iowa Baptists, but all Iowa people of faith are by this, the governor signing this legislation. And he just talked about people he has known personally, healthcare providers or wedding venue operators, that this is going to be a big protection for them, for people of faith in the workplace.
Yeah, very good. Very good. A couple of things out of New Orleans this week at the U.S. Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. We have stories on those. One is Will McCraney and his lawsuit against the North American Mission Board. Arguments were made before a three-panel judge there as he is appealing a previous court's decision. So we have a story at Baptist Press on that. And then also an appeal from a lady named Jane Rowe, who is bringing a suit against Paige Patterson and Southwestern Seminary, and arguments were made there to ask that a previous court's decision be overturned. Both of those appeals would bring those cases to a trial if they win. And so we have stories on both of those things at Baptist Press from this week. And then Laura,
and both in the Fifth Circuit. So a lot of activity in New Orleans this week. Yeah.
Yep. Absolutely. And then Laura, I pulled this one first person here. It's from Tony Martin. We've had a number of good first persons. We've had a number of great toolboxes this week at Baptist Press, but I just really appreciated this first person from Tony Martin. He's there in Mississippi and, just a good friend and just a great journalist, great communicator. But again, like we were talking about earlier, we all have life, you know, just because of the job that you do, you still have life, ministry, you know, we're just all real people. And he talks about how when his father died, that over the years that he had with his mother, she, like many folks, just kept the television on all the time and kept it on news channels. And that constant stream of news really shaped the way she viewed the world. And he does it. It's very quickly. It sounds like Tony Martin, you know, I can hear his voice just in the way he's writing here. And so, you know, he's just very gracious and kind, but right on it, you know, said, "Mama, don't be watching this stuff all the time. You're just seeing the same thing over and over and you don't need to do that to yourself." I love it. And then he walks
and who
through
among us hasn't told themselves absolutely. That I mean myself.
Yeah, absolutely. And then he walks through some suggestions on news intake, how to maintain just a healthy state of mind, healthy spiritual well-being, as you take in the news. And so I just I enjoyed reading that. I've thought about that a number of times.
Yeah, it was very practical. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you don't often, you do often hear people say, well, don't watch so much news or don't consume so many negative things, but you don't often see people giving you practical tips on how to do it. And so he did. And it was, you're right. It was very helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, that brings us, Laura, to our history moment, and that connects us back to where we started out on the West Coast at Golden Gate.
Yes. So, Golden Gate Seminary becomes Gateway Seminary. Well, that didn't happen 10 years ago. That was a little less than 10 years ago. But 10 years ago this week, we're recording this on April 5th, 10 years ago in April 1st of 2014, Golden Gate Baptist Theological Seminary reached a sale agreement for all its campus property in Mill Valley, California, and has initiated relocation of its primary campus to Southern California. So kind of a big anniversary for Gateway Seminary. It was 10 years ago. And now the years prior to that, I actually just finished reading Dr. Orge's book about leading through change. And he goes into great detail about all they had been through, trying trying to stay in Mill Valley, to stay on that campus because it was a beautiful campus at just a prime location in the city overlooking San Francisco Bay and all that.
Yeah.
They really wanted to stay there, but they could not get the community to agree to let them do the renovations that really had to be done in order to stay there. But at the same time, they didn't feel like they could find a buyer willing to meet all of the stipulations that they would have, mm-hmm. such as allowing them to stay there for a couple of years so that students could finish out their degrees, such as knowing that there was all of this restriction on the construction and improvements that could be made. And so many stipulations that the buyer would have to meet in order to be the right buyer at the right time. And a buyer came along that met every single one of them. It was miraculous, really. And he says that in the book, that it was almost, we knew when this happened that God was telling us, okay.
Yeah, the Lord had sent the right person. Yeah, absolutely. Right. Yeah.
And so it was just neat to realize this was 10 years ago. And after having just read this book and really read into all of the nitty gritty details of what they had to go through, and how now it's, they've been in Southern California now for a long time. They're very established there. The future is looking really bright, as we talked about earlier, with potentially Adam Groza coming on board as the president. And so at the time, Orridge said, "It's an unprecedented opportunity to build a new kind of seminary campus for education in the 21st century." And I feel like that was prophetic because they really did do that. If you've seen the campus, the way it operates there now, it's very different from other seminaries, but also very effective.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also providential, not only in meeting the need then at that point in time, but preparing them for the pandemic that was coming.
You're right. And the online education that had to happen. And
that's right. Yeah. So very neat. Great, great story there. So thank you for sharing that, Laura. All right. Well, before we go, I'll just give you one more update for those of you worried and concerned at home.
I was going to ask if you had any texts from Monica.
Yeah, the trampoline is gone. So.
Oh, man, your yard's going to look different when you get home.
So that's okay. That's the goal. Be easier to mow. So
that's true.
Yep. Absolutely. So these folks, it turns out they are pros at tearing down a trampoline and getting it into a very small car and taking off. So,
amazing. I didn't even know you could do it.
Yep. Fantastic. So we are impressed. All right. Well, thanks so much for listening to SBC this week. You just never know what you may hear on this podcast.
Never know. And as always, there were lots of stories and toolbox items and first persons and things that we didn't have time to talk about today, but you can get all those and much more at baptistpress.com. Thanks for listening.